Today is Wednesday, November 25th, and you're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Coming up, fears that the United States COVID-19 outbreak will worsen following tomorrow's Thanksgiving holiday.
We have a terrible 2 to 3 weeks ahead of us if we don't make changes to our behaviors and our policies.
Also ahead, how some companies are trying to help sports fans safely return to stadiums.
Tech companies have stepped in to help create safer environments for them.
Plus, the latest in the war in Ethiopia. These stories and more are next. Our top story today is COVID-19. The world's largest outbreak remains in the Americas. In the United States, there were over 2,000 recorded deaths from COVID Tuesday. That's the first time the U.S. has topped 2,000 deaths in a day since June. But the outbreak may get worse in the U.S. before it gets better. Millions of Americans have resumed traveling this year to spend tomorrow's Thanksgiving holiday with family and friends, despite a warning from the Centers for Disease Control to stay home. VOA's Carol Pearson has the latest.
Thursday is Thanksgiving in the U.S., and millions of Americans are flocking to airports, train stations, and taking to the roads to spend time with loved ones, despite warnings from the Centers for Disease Control to stay home. People like Becca Yanez, who bought her airplane tickets.
We haven't had Thanksgiving as a family in 12 years, so yeah, with flights kind of being cheap. And I already had COVID, so I was like, perfect, I can go somewhere.
Experts say that doesn't guarantee immunity. Some have gotten it more than once. Students are returning home from college, either for the holiday or for longer. Will Mason's college canceled in-person classes.
But I guess I don't really have an option there.
Infectious disease experts are sympathetic. Dr. Catherine Lay is with Cedars-Sinai Medical Center.
And I understand the desire during this time of year. We've had such a hard year, and it's time for the holidays, and we want to be around friends and family. But it's so important to stay at home.
Doctors like Lay are focused on the rising infection rate.
I mean, every single day, it's a new record that's very discouraging.
It's hard to follow CDC guidelines to stay 1.8 meters apart at airports, highway rest stops, and at train stations. Lay recommends eating outdoors if possible, keeping the windows open at home if indoors, avoiding crowds at restaurants, not standing in line anywhere.
And the primary mode of transmission that we really need to focus on is the respiratory droplets. So hence this kind of shift in recommendations to you have to wear a mask, please wear a mask, everybody wear a mask, and keep social distance.
And more bad news. Millions of Americans will travel the weekend after Thanksgiving and risk getting the virus or spreading it on their way home or once they get there. Public health experts are alarmed. Here's Dr. Joe Gerald at the University of Arizona.
We have a terrible 2 to 3 weeks ahead of us. If we don't make changes to our behaviors and our policies, the 3 weeks after that will be even worse.
Experts expect COVID rates throughout the U.S. to explode just before Christmas and the New Year's holidays, in part because of the Thanksgiving celebrations. And that's something the rest of the world should watch carefully as these other holidays get closer. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
Several European countries posted record COVID-19 death tolls Wednesday. Poland's reported a new daily record of 674 coronavirus-related deaths, while Russia reported a record 507 deaths in the past 24 hours, and Germany reported a record 410 deaths over the same time frame. The World Health Organization says the European region has suffered more than 67,000 total deaths. Despite the surge in deaths, the WHO says new infections in Europe have begun to slow down in the past week. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
The UN Health Agency says in its latest update that even though there's a downward trend in the number of infections in Europe, the region still has the biggest proportion of new cases and deaths globally. WHO notes Africa has the highest increase in new cases and deaths this week, driven by South Africa, Algeria and Kenya. In the past week, the number of new Europe cases has dropped by about 6% after a 10% decline the previous week, suggesting lockdowns across the continent are effectively slowing transmission. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Also looking at COVID in Japan, Tokyo's governor said the city will urge shorter working hours for bars and restaurants and ask residents to stay indoors as much as possible. The curbs are Japan's latest bid to rein in its highest surge in infections yet, with daily tallies on several recent days exceeding 500 in Tokyo. The city had 54 serious cases on Wednesday, the most since a state of emergency was lifted in May. Meanwhile, Singapore, which once had the highest COVID-19 rate in Southeast Asia, has all but eradicated the virus after reporting 14 days without any new local cases Tuesday. As sports fans start to trickle back into stadiums around the world amid the pandemic, sports teams and large venues are working out how to keep them safe. Brian Wood of Reuters reports on some new innovations meant to help mitigate the spread of the virus.
Temperature checks in Japan, a disinfectant tunnel in Israel, and timed entry in Australia. These are just a few of the ways sports venues around the world are adjusting their businesses in pandemic times. As fans trickle back into stadiums, tech companies have stepped in to help create safer environments for them. Kim Damron is the president and CEO of an analytics company called Paculon.
The one thing that we're seeing, though, is everybody, whether you're the Olympics, whether you're college football, whether you're the NBA, we're all working 20 times harder to get fans in.
Paculon provides fans with contactless tickets, interactive seat maps, and pod ticketing, which allows groups of 2, 4, or 6 to purchase seating socially distanced from other spectators. Zachary Klima is one of the founders of WaitTime, an artificial intelligence mobile app developed to help fans know where the longest lines are around a stadium. Cameras throughout a venue send real-time information to operators who can track and then respond to unsafe overcrowding of fans.
It's not just about finding the shortest line. These are risk zones. So what used to be a long line is now a risk zone, a COVID risk zone.
Another company working to make watching live sports safer is Populous. The architectural design firm is working with an NBA team in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, to create safe, socially distanced spaces for fans to gather. It plans to use shipping containers to host small bubbles of friends who will be able to order food and drink to their pod. With the Olympic Games set for 2021 and COVID-19 infections on the rise in many countries around the world, Olympics organizers have yet to decide whether to allow spectators into venues next year, and if so, how many.
That was Reuters' Brian Wood. This is VOA. A car with slogans scrawled on its sides crashed into the gate of the office of German Chancellor Angela Merkel in Berlin on Wednesday, and police arrested the 55-year-old driver. It was not clear if Merkel was in the building at the time of the crash. A government spokesman said no government officials or workers were in danger. Dozens of police and a fire engine rushed to the scene after the vehicle hit the gate. The vehicle had, quote, "stop globalization politics," end quote, written in white on one side, and, quote, "you damn killers of children and old people," end quote, on the other, Reuters reports. A German interior ministry spokesman said the driver has been known to authorities. Berlin newspaper BZ reported the same vehicle had rammed the gates of the chancellery in 2014. At that time, the messages, quote, "end this people killing climate change," end quote, and, quote, "Nicole, I love you," end quote, had been sprayed on its sides, BZ reported. In his first high-level meeting with Beijing officials, new Japanese Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga said stable ties with China were important as his country pursues a balancing act with its neighbor. On Wednesday, Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi met Suga at the end of his two-day trip in Japan, marking the first high-level visit since Suga was elected in September. Chinese President Xi Jinping wants to build, quote, good working relations, end quote, with his Japanese counterpart, Wang said, citing a message from Xi that he delivered to Suga. While Suga has steered clear of the harsh anti-China rhetoric used by Japan's ally, the United States, he has moved to counter China's influence by deepening ties with Australia and choosing Vietnam and Indonesia for his first overseas trip.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomy buffs looking up at the night sky on December 21st will be in for a real treat. According to Patrick Harrigan, a professor in the Department of Physics and Astronomy at Rice University, that's when the solar system's two largest planets, Jupiter and Saturn, will look like a double planet. Professor Harrigan says this planetary conjunction usually happens every 20 years. But what makes this cosmic delight even more special is that the two giant gas planets will look even closer to each other than usual, since they'll appear to be separated by a gap that's only one-fifth of a full moon. The last time the two planets appeared this close together was back on March 4th, 1226, during the Middle Ages. Harrigan says the next time the two planets appear as close together will be on March 15th, 2080. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. African Union envoys went to Ethiopia today to de-escalate the worsening war between the government of Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed and forces in the country's northern Tigray region, Reuters reports. The visit comes hours before the expiration of a 72-hour deadline that Abiy's government set for the Tigray People's Liberation Front to surrender or face an assault on their capital, Mekelle. Mekelle is home to 500,000 people. Some 42,000 refugees have fled over the border to Sudan, and TPLF rockets have hit neighboring Eritrea. Ethiopia's government-appointed Human Rights Commission has accused a Tigrayan group of carrying out what it calls a massacre of members of non-Tigrayan ethnic groups. Chief Commissioner Dr. Daniel Bekele says about 600 civilians of the Amhara and Wolkite ethnic groups were killed in the town of Maikadra with the complicity of Tigrayan security forces. VOA was unable to get someone in the Tigray region to confirm or deny the allegations, as communication to the area has been cut. Dr. Bekele says his commission was able to obtain the information because the town where the alleged killings took place is under control of federal forces. Dr. Bekele spoke with the host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show, James Butty, and here's a clip of their conversation.
This incident happened in western zone of the Tigray region in the context of the ongoing hostilities. The local security forces, which basically includes the militia and police, appeared to be retreating when the federal forces were advancing to the area. And just before they retreated and left the area, it has now become very clear that they have carefully planned and executed quite an atrocious massacre against the civilians, which targeted people on the base of ethnic identity, and they killed hundreds of people, according to our estimate from the local sources. It's an estimated of at least 600 people that have been killed by beatings, stabbing, strangulation, and some of them shot to death. So it's an atrocity crime executed in a very terrible way, which may amount to crimes against humanity or even a war crime.
You call this a massacre. So why would the Tigrayan youth want to massacre the Amhara or the Wolkite?
I wouldn't put it that way. It is not the Tigrayan youth that is doing a massacre. It is a particular informal youth group that identifies itself by the name Samri, which was aided and abetted by the local security structure, which includes the police and the local militia. And this happened in a context of the ongoing conflict, and the security structure from the area was retreating, and they appear to have went on a killing rampage of ethnic groups they identified as enemies. But these are civilians who reside in the area. And, you know, it is, it's basically an atrocity crime against civilians perpetrated by a criminal group, but which was unfortunately aided and abetted, as I said, by the local security structure, which was in charge at the time.
Dr. Bekele, as you know, there is an ongoing military campaign in the Tigray region. So how did your commission obtain this information?
The area where this atrocity happened is currently under the control of the federal forces. So we have been able to have unfettered access to the town where this atrocity happened, as it is currently under full control of the federal forces. Although security is gradually stabilizing in several parts of Tigray, we have not had any problem in accessing this part of Tigray region.
There are reports of a humanitarian crisis in the making as a result of the military crisis in Tigray. What do you make of what is happening in Tigray, the conflict itself?
That's a very unfortunate situation. The whole conflict situation and how it has unfolded and got to its current situation is an unfortunate development. And from our perspective at the Human Rights Institution, any such violent conflict or war situation puts human rights at great risk. You know, it leads to deserts, displacement, destruction, and perhaps the most egregious human rights abuses happen in a context of a violent conflict.
That was Dr. Daniel Bekele, head of the Ethiopian Government's Human Rights Commission, speaking to my colleague James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa. The fighting in Tigray began November 4th when the federal government launched an offensive in response to what it said was a TPLF attack on Ethiopian military facilities. The Ethiopian government says the offensive is aimed at some of the TPLF leaders. However, the TPLF says it is a war on all of Tigray. A boat with 35 North African migrants on board was heading towards the Canary Islands when it capsized Tuesday, emergency services said. Olivia Chan of Reuters has that story.
This is the dramatic scene when migrants were pulled from the water after the boat capsized just off the Canary Islands on Tuesday. The emergency services said 35 migrants, including women and children, had been on board. At least four people were found dead, and some were still missing as the emergency services looked for a second boat on Wednesday. Migrant arrivals on the Canary Islands have surged to 17,000 this year, 10 times last year's total. North Africans are growing increasingly desperate after losing their income from tourism, a sector hard hit by the coronavirus pandemic. The Spanish government recently promised to help build shelters for new arrivals after island authorities appealed for help in housing the thousands of migrants now sleeping in the open.
Thanks to Olivia Chan of Reuters for that report. Sri Lanka's government is digging a moat around one of its landfill sites to keep out elephant herds and reduce conflict between the animals and villagers. Flora Bradley-Watson of Reuters reports.
Rummaging through heaps of trash, elephants in eastern Sri Lanka look for pieces of wilted vegetable to eat. They're unaware that the plastic they sometimes pick up might kill them. A landfill site in the town of Ampara was created about a decade ago and is one of three garbage areas located next to a wildlife protection zone. The smell draws in dozens of elephants and other wild animals every day. P.H. Kumera of the Galoya Farmers Union says the rubbish is fatal for them.
There is no proper plan or a system for this. Local government institutions have established landfills on the border of the wildlife protection zones. Once that is done, the wild elephants and other wild animals who eat the rubbish die.
The government is digging trenches around the dump to ward away the elephants. They also want to keep the large animals from the town, where they've been known to destroy crops, property, and even people. It's a shaky coexistence between the villagers and the wild animals. Local environmental groups say 361 elephants died last year, mostly because of humans, while human deaths from elephants range from 20 to 80 a year. There are around 7,500 wild elephants in Sri Lanka.
That was Flora Bradley Watson of Reuters. That's it for our show today. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pounds Dawson, I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Stay safe, stay healthy, and have a great evening.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
For more than a year, the people of Lebanon have taken to the streets, demanding social, political, and economic reform. They are tired of living under the country's deteriorating conditions, including rising inflation, crumbling infrastructure, water pollution, and unreliable electricity, while political leaders enrich themselves and refuse to implement needed reforms. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo spoke about Lebanon at a recent press briefing.
The Lebanese people clearly want their corrupt political class, so much of it beholden to Hezbollah, to stop ruining their country.
On November 6th, the United States took action to support the Lebanese people in their calls for reform and accountability. The Treasury Department's Office of Foreign Assets Control sanctioned Gibran Basile, president of the Free Patriotic Movement political party and a former Lebanese cabinet official. The Free Patriotic Movement is a key political ally of Hezbollah. Basile was designated under the authority of Executive Order 13818, which builds upon and implements the Global Magnitsky Human Rights Accountability Act, targeting corruption and serious human rights abuses around the world. Secretary of State Pompeo pointed out that U.S. sanctions against Basile also followed and built upon the recent counterterrorism designations under Executive Order 13224 of former Lebanese officials Yusuf Finianis and Ali Hassan Khalil, who put personal interests and those of Iran-backed Hezbollah ahead of the welfare of the Lebanese people. Through his corrupt activities, Basile has also undermined good governance and contributed to the prevailing system of corruption and political patronage that plagues Lebanon, which has aided and abetted Hezbollah's destabilizing activities. Secretary of State Pompeo said it is long past time for Lebanese political leaders to put aside their own narrow self-interests and instead work for the people of Lebanon.
They want an independent nation. They want a sovereign country. They don't want the political elites that have been corrupted through the system that was put in place and permitted them to loot and rob their country. They want freedom. They want prosperity. They want jobs.
Those are also the things that the United States wants for Lebanon, said Secretary Pompeo. And the sanctions we put in place against the former minister are appropriate and useful towards getting us closer to that one day where the Lebanese people can have what it is they so richly deserve.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Join Press Conference USA guest host Kim Lewis and VOA journalist Ayan Bior as they discuss factors that led to an increase in female genital circumcision during the coronavirus pandemic with Justine Carlson, acting regional director for UNFPA's East and Southern Africa offices. Listen on Press Conference USA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America. Join Issues in the News moderator Dan Raviv and a panel of prominent Washington journalists as they deliberate the latest top stories of the week, including the world has seen nearly 58.5 million confirmed cases of COVID-19, according to Johns Hopkins University in the U.S. Don't miss Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America. The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 22:30 UTC. We're also available online at